the podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. Oh, Ned, he laughed so hard that made me cry.
Welcome to the Run, Run, Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is not Chris, your host. This is Dirt Dog. I'm the guest announcer this week. And when you're done listening to the Run, Run, Live podcast, come run, walk, crawl, or however you have to amble over to my podcast, which is Dirt Dog's Rambling Diatribe Podcast. It can be found on iTunes or over at my blog at www.dirtdogramblingdiatribeblogspot.com, where I am a father, husband, and an ultra runner attempting my first 100 miler this year at Burning River. So join me and my dirty squad, which includes Little Dirt Dog, Dirty Feather, and Dirty Girl for all of our adventures and misadventures leading up to the race and beyond. So whenever and wherever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great. I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in. You ready to have some fun? Come on, let's go for a run.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. Come on down to the Run Run Live Emporium for a Monster Runners face-off. We've got New Balance Nitro Burners, Asics, Ass Haulers, Reebok Road Rashers, and more. Don't miss the chance to see Newman's Neanderthal Couch Crusher. Bring the kiddies. The first 50 people get a Dan Quayle bobblehead. Don't hesitate. Go now. If you're experiencing nausea, vomiting, explosive diarrhea, constipation, high blood pressure, or intestinal eruptions of any kind, if you're in your third trimester of pregnancy or in the middle of performing consensual adult activities, running may not be for you. Therefore, it is recommended that you find your way over to runningpodcasts.org to find a suitable podcast for your listening pleasure.
Okay, folks, welcome to the 64th edition of the Run, Run, Live podcast. It's been a good week, been a long week. I'm a bit tired right now. As we used to say when I worked in Ciudad Chihuahua, tango sueño, if you know what I mean. Thank you, Dirt Dog, for the intro. He sounds like a nice guy, doesn't he? And the Monster Truck Rally commercial was a spark of creativity from Newman that he and I came up with earlier in the week as we were spitballing the idea, I guess you might say. You probably wouldn't say that, but somebody might say that. I think I saw that in an old 50s movie. So anyhow, and congratulations to Ari, who has one of my Facebook friends and otherwise friends, who ran to work 20 miles through Manhattan. So there you go, Run to Work, member of the Run to Work Club. This is a special podcast because most people, they'll talk about the Boston Marathon. But today, you and I are going to talk to Dave McGilvery, the race director of the Boston Marathon. You know, and we've talked to Dave before, and he's an amazing guy. And he's the perfect guy, frankly, for this race and to be a race director in general. He's got this unique combination of a runner's headset and an accountant's brain. So it's really good. You may not have heard of Dave, but he's the real deal. He ran across the U.S. From Seattle to Boston, actually between two Red Sox games, back before it was cool, back in the 70s or 80s. And he runs his age in miles every year on his birthday. And I think he's 50-something now. And he's run the Boston Marathon every year since he was 18 years old. So when the course is cleared, when everybody else has gone home and the water tables are packed up on Patriots Day, Dave goes out to Hopkinton and he runs in by himself. And you can pick up his book, The Last Pick, and it tells some of these great stories. And he's a really amazing guy. But he's one of those guys who doesn't brag about himself, so you wouldn't know it by talking to him. So, yeah, I've got so many other cool things to tell you about. I wrote up the Georgia ING Marathon. I wrote up the race story, and it should be posted up on Cool Running in the Viewpoint section by my friends Skip and Dave. And thanks, by the way, to Sean and Jason and Jenny for putting up with me. I'm not easy to run with. Don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter, CYKT Russell. That is Chris Yellow King Tango Russell, two S's, two L's. And Facebook, too. I'm Chris Russell in Boston. You can find me. If you can't find me, just send me an email. I'll point you in the right direction. I finally had to block somebody this week. This guy was ranting. about the coming depression and the end of the world, yada, 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 yada. So I replied to him in my amusing way. I said, you can't listen to the naysaying nabobs, which everyone should know is a Ronald Reagan quote, the great communicator there from one of his first speeches. Is one of his all-time famous quotes. And this guy came at me, you know, he's all in my face with, you can't ignore this, you're hiding your head in the sand, you're causing the problem. So I said, yeah, but I can ignore you, and I blocked him. Because you know what, guys? I don't have the time to spend worrying about crap I can't change. I'm going to use that energy and that time to focus on stuff I can change and make me and my world and the world of my family and you, my friends, a better place. So why don't we do that, huh? Huh? All right. I got some other stuff stuck in here, too. So on with the show.
Well, I'm out with Buddy down here at the Boy Scout Bridge. You can hear the stream in the background, the birds singing. It's about 40 degrees. It's overcast. There's a front coming through. I think it's actually going to like have snow showers tonight. It's really cold. You can hear the wind howling in the treetops. I'm down in like a little valley here, right, where the stream is. But up on top of the ridge, it's 20, 30 miles an hour. It'd be cold, overcast. That's a dog here in the background swimming upstream. He's a nutcase. There's some, we ran down here before with some wood ducks. Here they are. There they are. Some mallards over there, making a little home for themselves, getting all reproductive and everything. And there was a great blue heron. There's a couple of great blue herons that hang out here, grabbing the frogs and the fish, which is kind of nice to see, because we didn't have those before. Those just came back in the last, you know, 5-10 years. Because we had a big DDT thing here that killed most of the higher level birds, made their eggs not hold up. So all the stuff's coming back. I mean, looks clean enough. You never know. So yeah, getting ready for Boston. I was going to run like 10-12 today, but you know what? I just don't have the energy. I can feel it in my body. I just, sometimes you can feel it. I'm jet lagged out from flying back from Zurich yesterday. Left Zurich at 7 o'clock in the morning, get into my house like 9:30 at night, 10 o'clock at night. So you got to throw a 6-hour time change in there. So that means I really left at 1 o'clock in the morning, get home at 10:30 at night. So, and I hear that wind, it's howling down the valley now. So anyhow, we're going to go and run home. I got to do some work in the yard, build a nice big brush pile. Thinking about Boston today. I got a room. My club has a room at the finish line. That's the dog in the background. There's leaves floating down the stream, and he's chasing them down and biting them because they're moving. Anything that moves is his. No, he's going snort, snort because he's got water up his big nose. Yeah, I got a room at the end of the Boston Marathon. We get food and drinks and a massage therapist in there. So when we get done with the marathon, my club, we can get you know, get a hot shower. Best feeling in the world is a hot shower. Especially some days it's real cold. Some days it's real hot. But you know, get that, just be able to get up, get away from the finish line where it's a mob scene. One of the things I don't like about Boston is how far they make you walk to pick up your bags and get to your stuff. You know, it's just, you just ran 26 miles and like the last thing you want to do is stand in line for 45 minutes. But, you know, that's all they can do. It's in the city. So, yeah, I'm getting excited about it. I'm thinking I might race. After this run, I'm thinking I might not race. But if I race, that means I kind of put my head down. There won't be much time for talking and things like that. But I don't know what I got in me. I might have a 325 in me if we get the right weather. That'll be nice. Because I'm already qualified for next year's race. But that's only with like a 328, so be nice to drop the. I love racing. I love just spending myself 100% in the marathon. I love that. So it's always a challenge, you know, how hard to go out. But you listen to your body, you know. After a few, you know. That's, I'm getting excited. I love Boston. I was listening to Steve Spitipidations and waxing poetically about it. As poetic as Steve can get. As poetic as an engineer can get about Boston. But it is. It's something you can't describe. Just like running a marathon is really something you can't describe until you do it. So, pretty excited. A couple more weeks. My calf's killing me today from running up that mountain in Switzerland yesterday. Or the day before, or whatever freaking day it is. So anyhow, what else? Oh yeah, I read that book, The Omnivore's Dilemma, on the plane. Pretty good. It gets real slow at the end, but the part about the polyphase farm, I had read some stuff about that before, the sustainable farming, the rotational farming, that's really cool. I like that a lot. And what else I read? I read Hirokomi? I forget what the guy's name is. Japanese guy. His name is The name of the book is What I Talk About When I Talk About Running. It's pretty good. It's introspective. The prose is a little staccato in Japanese. I think it was translated. I'm not sure, but it's a pretty good book. It's got some really good points. Oh, it's starting to rain. I gotta get back. This front's moving through. Saw it on the map before I left, so it's here. It's here. Me and my wet dog. Gotta go home. Build a brush pile. Get ready to burn tomorrow.
And now for our featured interview.
Hey, Dave. Hey. Hey, you know, when you get old, the star button looks like the pound button, you know?
Gotta get glasses.
Pretty soon. Yeah, I'm going to need a cell phone the size of a laptop pretty soon. I wanted to get an update on the race. Everybody's so excited. Dave McGilvery, race director for the Boston Marathon. I had the privilege of knowing. And this is your time of year, huh?
Everyone's time of year, it seems like, you know, the excitement obviously is building. You know, we have a record field size other than, again, the 100th running in 96. So we have over 26,000 registered for the race, you know, 24 charities. So a lot of people who are doing it for greater causes than just themselves. And so, yeah, it's knocking on the doorstep now.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I wanted to ask you is, you know, what happened with the registration this year? Usually I'm, you know, there's been years when I'm running Hyannis to qualify for Boston, you know? And you guys were closed in, what, February?
End of January.
Yeah.
But I think it's typical of what's happening in the industry throughout the country. Races are just selling out at record pace. There seems to be, you know, the second running boom going on, a little bit different than in the 70s, more about participation than necessarily hardcore competition in terms of trying to run, you know, 2:30 or better kind of times. People,
right,
I think now are, you know, feeling confident and the walls of intimidation have been broken down. So there's just that much more interest, and as a result, you know, the demand is greater than the supply. And you know, some people say, well, it's a good problem to have, and I look at it as maybe not quite that way. It's really not a good problem because you really, sometimes you feel like you're making more enemies than friends because you're unfortunately closing out so many people. But yes, we closed out at the end of January, and then we had the very difficult task of telling qualified runners that we're closed, and obviously that's extremely disappointing to them because they work so hard to run a qualifying time, and then they go to register, and, you know, they're surprised by the fact that we're closed out. But we have no choice. I mean, we're about quality, not quantity. We can't just take anyone and everyone and have no field size limit. The cities and towns along the route and public safety and a lot of different agencies and entities weigh in on what that magic number is in terms of what we feel we can safely and operationally and organizationally accommodate, and we've reached that total. And I guess going forward, we'll have to reassess, you know, the field size, we'll have to reassess qualifying standards, we'll have to reassess all of it because we're faced with something very different today than we've ever experienced in the past.
Just when it got easy for me.
Just when it got easy for you? Yeah.
Yeah, just when I got the 3:30 time, you guys are going to crank down the standard.
No, I didn't say that. I said we're going to look at it. You know, again, in the past, our standards have been such that, you know, anyone and everyone who's qualified right up until, you know, say mid-March to the end of March, we've had room for them. And now, you know, it's, you know, the room isn't there. And so, we're going to have to just ask ourselves, how do we respond to this? And
So instead of having it be an 18-month window, make it like a 12-month window? That would be one of the options?
Anything's a possibility. We, you know, this just occurred, so we need to just get through the next few weeks and, you know, put on a good event. And then over the course of May, June, July, figure this all out. And we've already set up our meetings already to do just that. We're not taking this lightly. And but I can't say emphatically as we speak, you know, I have all the, or anyone has all the answers and solutions. We really need to get together as a team and really take a hard look at all of this.
Yeah, I know. I was reading that the Runner's World piece on the qualifying times. It was kind of funny because people think there's some sort of science here, and it's all very, you know, it's sort of grown over the years, you know, depending on the organization
yeah.
and the field.
Yeah. Well, it's an evolutionary process. Plus, it's, you know, you have to look at the very objective of the standards. I mean, initially, perhaps to sort of limit the field size, and then it added, you know, as that matriculated, it became a standard to achieve, and then over the years, you know, times of participants slowed a bit, you know, from in the late 80s and 90s. So we responded to that by adjusting some of the older qualifying times, and now by virtue of the fact that we're filling up and closing out and turning away, we need to look at them again. And I'm not suggesting we're going to relax them or we're going to tighten them. I don't know at the moment, but we certainly are going to, you know, reassess all of it. We have to.
Yeah, you know, that's cool. Boston's always been a different beast, you know. And I think it's, you know, I've been to a lot of marathons now. I think it's just hilarious, the expectation that people have of marathons. When I remember, geez, that must have been what? You know, less than 30 years ago at Boston, there were no water tables. You know, the winner got like a toaster and a laurel wreath, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, back when they were talking about Bill Rogers, I can remember Bill Rogers winning New York City, and he got like a blender and they towed his car, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it is big business now all around the board, and the expectations are significant, and the bar has been raised, and a lot of sponsor dollars, a lot of media attention. The charitable program has, you know, been a phenomenon. A lot of people are doing it, raising millions and millions and millions of dollars. So that has added a dimension to this overall equation that didn't exist at this level, you know, 10, 15 years ago. So yeah, I mean, the stakes are high, and we as event management folks have an obligation and a responsibility to respond accordingly. But at the same time, I think that as a runner myself, you know, when I enter races, I have a different perspective because I'm on the other side of the fence on the management side, but I understand what it takes to do this and how complex it can be and how many masters you have to serve. And sometimes I think that, you know, entitlement by participants is a little bit unreasonable, that everyone has certain degrees of expectation, and perhaps if they knew what it took to manage one of these things, that maybe those expectations would come down a decibel or two. So
I've always said that the race directors are sort of the unsung heroes of our sport, because they're just getting the crap beat out of them, put on an event that everybody can do it, enjoy, and nobody cares.
Yeah. Well, I've always said that race directors are sort of sometimes, not always, but facetiously I say they're treated like the crabgrass in the lawn of life, you know, where, you know, they're just expected to produce. And interestingly, when I go to clinics the day before a marathon and there might be 400 runners sitting in the audience and I'm speaking, I might say, well, how many people in the audience are running the marathon tomorrow? And, you know, 400 hands go up, and I say, okay, how many people here are directing the race tomorrow? Raise your hand, you know, and obviously no hands go up except, say, mine. And it's just an indication. I said, well, the odds are pretty much stacked against me, aren't they? And what I mean by that is all they need to do is really take care of themselves. You know, they got one person to worry about, and that's themselves, whereas as a race director or a race organizer, there's only a handful of us who are expected to manage all of that. And so, obviously, I think that runners need to keep that in perspective, you know, because it's tough to really take care of everybody individually, and that there's a degree of personal responsibility that every runner needs to sort of understand. And if they focus on themselves and take care of themselves, I think that all goes well. But if they expect race management to sort of take care of them every step of the way, that's when it gets a little bit dicey.
Yeah, there's an element of accountability, which is something I think we can be cranky old guys and talk about society in general there.
Yeah.
We have the you know, the benefit of a larger span of time than most, and
mm-hmm.
having grown up in New England and seen, you know, sort of the rough roots of running. So
yeah.
it's an interesting perspective. to see these mega marathons with all the entertainment and everything. Mm-hmm. But so what's new this year? What do we need to look out for?
Well, I guess there's that adage, if it's not broken, don't fix it, although I don't totally subscribe to it, because I think that even if something's not broken, it can be improved upon, or there can be enhancements. But no, there's, I think things went so well last year that really, for the first time in a while, there aren't any what I would consider radical changes to the event at all. You know, generally the same field size. You know, out in Hopkinton, the layout is pretty much the same. The Athletes Village, the two-wave start, the lineup in the corral systems, all that. The courses, the course, not much change at the finish. So, you know, which is beneficial to all of us. Every time you make a change, there's a learning curve and there's a risk involved. So if you... Yep. If you can finally get a system down where you think that it's working and you don't have to make changes, sort of that's a good thing for everybody. You know, we are tweaking some things. You know, the start of the elite women's race and the start of the wheelchair race are being moved up by 3 minutes. The reason being is last year in the elite women's race, the men were having a really good day and the women were not having as good a day, and it was getting close out there in the course where the lead men were almost about to take over the lead women, and I really don't want to see that happen because of the narrowness of the course and lead vehicle packages passing one another and whatnot. So we opened up that gap a little bit. So there were things like that most runners don't even see or wouldn't even recognize, but there's a lot of those smaller tweaking things that we've done, but nothing, no major surgery whatsoever. I guess the big sort of newness to the event is the Sunday events. We have a 5K race that we're putting on, the BAA 5K. That's a first-time event. We guessed back 6 months ago that, you know, if we put this on, we'd get 4,000 participants, and with 2 weeks to go, we have 3,750 or something. So we're going to slide right into that 4,000 number. That takes the place of the Freedom Run, which was an untimed sort of tour of Boston, if you will, over the years. But now we felt that we wanted to give an opportunity to people to actually sort of participate in a race format the day before and then cross the finish line of the marathon itself and all that. So a lot of former winners of the marathon are going to participate, and other celebrities are going to participate. So it's going to be a fun event. I really think that this 5K is going to really explode in years ahead. So, you know, it's always kind of fun, too, to be part of an inaugural event, too. And then that's going to be followed immediately by a series of one-mile invitational one-mile events, a high school boys, a high school girls mile, and then followed by an elite pro men, an elite pro women mile. Right there, it's a loop course at the finish line. So once the 5K is finished, they can just wrap around, sit in the stands, and watch these series of one-mile races happen. So that's Sunday's events, and those are obviously very different. So and obviously new. So we're excited about that.
Where are those going to be?
Right there at the finish line of the marathon. The 5K is at the there at Copley Square Park.
Okay.
Yeah. So the 5K is the actual beginning loop of what was the Olympic trials last year. So we're sort of maintaining that course, if you will. If we were to bring back the trials in 2012, perhaps, then, you know, we've already have that portion of that course already established. So that's one of the reasons why we decided to do this. So the 5K will start right there in Copley Square Park and run a loop around and then finish across the finish line of the marathon. And then the one-mile races will start right at the finish line of the marathon and do 3 loops around the city block and finish right where it started. So,
hey, what's the breakout in terms of, you know, the 26K? What's the breakout between charity runners and qualified runners?
We always try to maintain a certain percentage to maintain the integrity of the qualification procedure. The charity waiver percentage is around 22%, and the race is the balance. So, you know, it's on average, it's 80-20 is, you know, give or take a percentage point or two is what we try to maintain. And obviously, the request for charitable members and invitational waivers, if you will, is, you know, you can imagine what the demand for those are. So, you know, we're saying no a lot more than we're saying yes. And so by maintaining that ratio, we think we're satisfying both sides of the ledger. I mean, we're maintaining the majority of the race, you know, qualifiers, and you know, they obviously, you know, they line up in front, and you know, they because of their qualifying times and whatnot, so they get the benefit of that, whereas the others you know, get further back, you know, are assigned to corrals and further back. So
You know, I get the Boston Marathon is by far the best seeded corral system I've ever run. I mean, I never after the first mile, I never trip over anybody. So,
well, that's mainly because of the qualifying times. I mean, that you can't cheat it. I mean, whatever you qualify with, that's where you're seeded. So, it really isn't like a lot of other races on the honor system. Or, you know, where people just look at pace signs at the start and say, well, here's a six-minute pace sign. I'm going to run 8 minute, but I'm just going to line up here anyways. Plus, organizationally.
I did one last week in Atlanta that was exactly like that. I was tripping over people for the first 7 miles. So what, any celebrity sightings this year for us? Who we got?
You know, to be honest with you, really none that any of us are aware of. I mean, if there are, we don't know it. I don't know it anyways. Maybe someone does, but I don't. No, I don't think anyone of the caliber of a Hollywood movie star or a Lance Armstrong type. I mean, there are some folks that are VIP type people. I know the president of the Florida Marlins is running, and a former player with the Marlins and some other teams. Jeff Cohen is running, and you know, so former Major League Baseball players and stuff like that, but I don't think anyone on the sideline is going to see and recognize necessarily, but that's, you know, that's from what I know.
That's, you know, I always like when those guys run, because it gives me a little ego boost beating one of those guys like 2 hours, right?
Yeah. I hear you.
I was thinking about meeting some people out in the Athletes Village, you know, having a little meet up there. But some of the people I want to meet are in the other wave, you know. So would you suggest that people, like, if they want to meet in Hoppington and they're in different waves?
It doesn't matter. We don't sectionalize the village.
We don't.
No, we did the first year, and we found that didn't work as well because, you know, if I'm in, like you say, if you and I are brothers and I'm in wave one and you're in wave two and we head out to Hoppington together, we want to kind of sit and relax with one another. And the BAA, we separated you. And, you know, and people weren't overly thrilled with that. So now we've been able to rearrange things where we just say, here's one big village and you all can go wherever you want to go. It's just that when wave one is called, we only expect wave one runners to leave. And then when wave two runners are called, then they leave. So as long as everybody pays attention and everyone cooperates, and we did that last year, and it seemed to work extremely well, so we're leaving it the same. So you can meet. You can go travel together, go together, stay together right up until, you know, you're called to the line.
Yeah, last year's race was phenomenal, Dave. It was very, I mean, it was great. I don't think I wanted to go out that well. Ever. Yeah, that's a once in 10 years where the weather and everything cooperates.
Yeah. Well, we're hoping for a repeat if that's even possible. So.
So you guys have a lot of like banks and financial institutions as sponsors. Has this current sort of you know, recession kerfuffle thrown a wrench into any of your sponsorship?
You know, you gain some, you lose some, but overall, I guess, knock on wood, for our event, this particular race, we're doing fine, you know, from our, you know, principal sponsor, John Hancock Financial Services, and followed right up with Adidas, and then all the others. Pretty much almost all the sponsors that we've had over the last few years have renewed, so we're extremely pleased with that. Certainly in this economy, races are dealing with the same concerns that, you know, the general public is, and that is, you know, the economic plight. And
right.
What's interesting is that now races are rarely able to survive through, more through, it's a participatory-driven industry more than it is a sponsor-driven industry, whereas in the early 70s and whatnot, it was more of a sponsor-driven industry because in order to afford to produce an event, you needed to have sponsorship because the field sizes weren't so strong that you could survive just off our entry fees, and now that's changed a bit. So even in a down economy, as long as you get the numbers, you still might be able to survive.
Yeah.
Certainly it helps if you have both, sponsorship and numbers. So.
You know, funny you should say that. We had that same conversation this year at my race. Like, well, we don't have to put all those logos on the shirt, you know?
Yeah, just it's a catch 22. You need sponsor money in order to promote and market your event to drive the numbers, but at the same time, you know, if your race has been around for a while, maybe it already has, you know, inertia and people know it exists, and so you don't have to market or advertise it as much, and if you put on a good show, people are going to show up anyway. So that's what we got going for us right now, but you know, as you know, things change, and so you've always got to stay on your toes. Yeah.
Yeah. Any links or phone numbers you want to hand out to people?
Not really. It's just my company, DMSC Sports, we produce about 23 events a year. Obviously, we're involved with the marathon and the races on Sunday, and then after that, we have the Roadie 5K, which is the New England Grand Prix again in Rhode Island, Lincoln, Rhode Island, at Twin River on June 7th. And at the same day, we're putting on the Vision 5K at Boston College. So we have two races that we're managing on the same day. So that should be interesting. And then the following week, we have a race in Green Bay, Wisconsin, called the Bellin Run, which will have about 18,000 people in it. And the list goes on and on and on. So if people are interested in running in our events, our website is www.dmsesports.com, and you'll see the schedule of events, and they'll have links there to each of the individual races that we manage.
Sure, and be a well-managed event.
Thank you.
All right, I'll let you go. Thanks for cutting out some time to talk to me. I'm really looking forward to the race this year. It's going to be a blast.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
All right, bye.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
It is Chris, and it's a day dripping with irony here. It's been a busy week. I got wrapping up the road race that I'm race director of and getting excited about Boston. And ironically, I went on Craigslist to buy my mountain bike because I wanted to get a mountain bike, but I didn't want to pay $1 million for it because running's a obsession. Owning a bike is like owning a yacht or a horse or something and get out of control fast. So I found one on Craigslist, and the guy's in Brookline. And so I'm still trying to get out of Brookline. So I round the corner to where this guy is. He's on Beacon Street, right? And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm in Cleveland Circle. Oh, my God, that's right at mile 21, 21 and a half of the Boston Marathon, right there, right on that long flat bit on Beacon Street before you see the Citgo sign. And I actually started to get chills. It's like, oh, crap. Because that's really where you're miserable. It's no man's land. You can't, you just don't know, you know, what to do at that point. You can't see the finish, and you're over the hills, and you're usually pretty destroyed, and it flattens out. So I got my bike, so I'm going to cross over to biking pretty soon, and I'm driving out the marathon course. So that's pretty cool, man, pretty cool. So I got to go down and do my Yassos tonight and see what I got in me. I have no freaking idea, because I got the miles. You know, I ran the Atlanta Marathon with Sean pretty slow. I got the miles. I don't have the, I haven't been doing a whole bunch of quality. You know, with the injuries I've had, I haven't been doing a lot of quality work. So, you know, it's hard to know what I got in me for a marathon. So I'm going to go down and do a Yasso test. I'm going to do my Yasso test at 325. It's a 325 marathon. So what you do is you see if you can run. There's the graveyard. See that graveyard right there? That's the graveyard where Dave McGilvery DNF'd in his first Boston Marathon, right there. I'm going to try to run 10 800s at 3 minutes and 25 seconds. And if I can do that with a one-lap jog in between, so 200 meters, 400 meters in between at a jog, if I can do that, then, you know, it all points that I can run that race, and it's pretty accurate. It's real accurate. So I'm heading up Heartbreak, the backside of Heartbreak Hill here now. So pretty cool. I wasn't expecting this, but it's kind of cool. So we'll see how I do on my yacht. So I'm feeling pretty freaking tired. But you know, if you didn't run every time you felt crappy, you'd never run, right? So gotta go. So I'm passing the chapel. That's the top of the. That's where you can see it on Heartbreak when you're coming up over Heartbreak Hill. That's how you know, because sometimes you don't know what hill you're on, because at that point in the race you're kind of brain dead. And if you're in shape and you're from this part of the country, a lot of times the hills really don't feel like much. You know, I know that sounds terrible, but the hills themselves, it's hard to know. You know, unless you know the course real well, you're always hearing of Heartbreak Hill like it's some monster. It's really not. If you're in shape, it's pretty darn easy. That's how you know. Anyhow, you see that chapel. It's like this Gothic church off to the right. And here I am, right on the top of Heartbreak Hill. There's a bunch of people out here running. On Heartbreak. Look at that. Must be some sort of team and training thing. They're not wearing bib numbers. Not running very fast either. So it must be one of those charity groups. I'm driving right into the sun. Here is that. Here's that goofy little speed bump. Good old Heartbreak Hill. Awesome. Where's the statue? There's supposed to be a statue here. By the time I get to this point in the race, I'm never paying attention. I got other things in my mind. Oh, there's a guy. There's a guy wearing last year's shirt. So, he's into it. All right. Here's some people walking. Oh, man, the roads are beat. You hear that? That's my truck jumping around. The roads are beat. Oh, there's a bunch more people running. It's crazy. Crazy. It's one of the things about the marathon course out here in Boston is that for a month before, people just come out and run the course, and it's always got a big crowd of runners on it, no matter every night and every day, every weekend day, it's always got a big crowd of runners on it. So it's pretty interesting.
That's it. You, as the Car Talk guys say, you've squandered another perfectly good 40 minutes listening to me yammer on. That's okay. My podcast is fully covered for time wastage. And if you feel you've had your time misappropriated, send a letter to my underwriters at AIG, and we'll take care of it. I did buy a used, new Kona trail bike, and I did take it out today. And the people on Twitter, the little Twitter elves, said that I should call it the Mad Dog Express. I should name my bicycle that. I went out with Anthony today, and it's a blast, I tell you. And my bottom hurts, and my legs are killing me. And I said to Anthony, I said, how's it feel to be kicking the ass of an ultramarathoner? And he thought that was pretty funny. So I did, and I did do my yassos last night down the track, 10 o'clock, doing yassos in the dark. All right, I won't torture you. I averaged somewhere between 320 and 324. Didn't have any problems at all. So if I get the right weather, don't do anything stupid, I should be able to run a 325 or better, which is good for when they change the qualifying standards for next year. I signed up for the Marine Corps Marathon in the fall. I don't know why, but I did. I have had some people ask about my book. It's called The Midpacker's Lament, and it is available on Amazon. It's a little bit hard to find. If you want a copy from me, you want me to sign a copy, I'll send you a copy. I have some laying around here. I think I do anyhow. I think I have a few left, so I'll mail them to you for $17. Because that'll help me pay for my bike, put some shekels in my pocket. So, I'm out in Milwaukee and Chicago on Monday, Tuesday. Anybody wants to run, give me a jingle. I'm in White Plains on Thursday, just briefly. And if anybody's interested in taking a shower after the marathon, we've got a hotel room at the finish line, so send me an email and I'll give you the secret password. I don't know when I'm heading into the expo yet, but when I figure it out, I'll tweet it. So be a tweeter with me and I'll tweet it to you. And I plan to, as of right now, I'm going to be up against the back fence to the left of the stage, right across from the field entrance down in Hockington. So come by, say hi, find me. And everyone have a fantastic weekend and week, and we'll see you out there. Tonight's music is called Tied to the Love by the band Great Bloomers, and it's available on the PodSafe Music Network. Enjoy. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line and I will see you out there.
Run, run, live. The podcast for all your running needs.